Hello there. Today is Tuesday, May 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, multiple fatalities reported at a concert of an American pop singer in Manchester, England.
Around 50 casualties that are being treated at six hospitals across Greater Manchester.
President Trump receives a warm welcome in Israel.
I look forward to working closely with you to confront the dangers we face together in this violent and volatile Middle East.
Here in the U.S., the president's first budget proposal includes deep cuts to social programs. Also ahead, a movie starring a deaf actress is winning high praise. It's all on today's International Edition. A chaotic scene in Manchester, England, Monday night, where British police confirm at least 19 people have been killed and dozens wounded after a massive explosion at a concert by American pop star Ariana Grande. Manchester police have just held a news conference. Here's Chief Constable Ian Hopkins.
And around 50 casualties that are being treated at six hospitals across Greater Manchester. My thoughts are very much with those that have been injured and lost their lives and their loved ones at this terrible time. We are doing all that we can to support them. Officers from Greater Manchester Police and Emergency Services are working at the scene and are supporting those affected. We are coordinating the operation here at Greater Manchester Police Headquarters. An emergency number is available for all those concerned about their loved ones or anyone who may have been in the area. The number is 0161 856 9400. We are currently treating this as a terrorist incident until we have further information. We are working closely with National Counter-Terrorism Policing Network and UK intelligence partners. This is clearly a very concerning time for everyone. We're doing all that we can, working with local and national agencies to support those affected as we gather information about what happened last night. As you will understand, we are still receiving information and updates, so we'll provide further detail when we have a clearer picture. I want to thank people for their support and ask them to remain vigilant, and if they have any concerns at all, to report them to the National Anti-Terrorist Hotline. The number is 0800 789 321. It is important also that people here in Manchester avoid the area around Manchester Arena so that emergency services can continue to effectively deal with the incident at that location. Thank you very much.
And Prime Minister Theresa May also said it's being treated as, quote, an appalling terrorist attack. Ambulances were seen rushing to the Manchester Arena venue, and police added in a statement that people should avoid the area. Many in the audience were young girls who were fans of Grande, a singer and actress who has appeared in TV and film roles. Video from the concert showed thousands of fans scrambling and screaming, trying to escape the building. Joining me now for the very latest on what is known, VOA London correspondent Luis Ramirez. Thank you for being with us. What can you tell us?
Well, the latest is that police in Manchester are treating this as a terrorist incident. They are saying that if they're looking at the possibility of a suicide bomb that went off during this concert at the Manchester Arena. It was packed with concert goers. The explosion happened toward the end of the concert being held by the American pop singer Ariana Grande. And so many, many people on a Monday night attending this concert, when they heard this explosion, the entire area sealed off, a big emergency declared. The hospitals are expecting many more casualties as people are pulled from the arena there.
Do they have any idea if it was just one explosion or more than one?
At this point, what we're seeing is amateur video, people who were taking video during the concert and happened to get the sound of the blast. It is, at least according to some of the video that's being shown, one explosion, but it could be more. That there's a bomb squad, several bomb squads there at the scene investigating to see exactly what happened.
How unprecedented is this?
There have been recent terrorist attacks in Britain. The latest, of course, happened in the month of March when a man drove a car onto a sidewalk and plowed through a number of people in Westminster in London. And so Britain has been on alert. There's a visible police presence and certainly armed police, which is a rare sight in Britain. Police traditionally in that country have been unarmed. And so there is a move to arm police to deal with this terrorist threat. That said, Britain has not seen the kind of casualties, the scale of attacks that have been seen in France and in Germany, which have had, where I'm sitting now in Brussels, so certainly there was a big terrorist attack in coordinated attacks last year. However, this attack comes at a very sensitive time. Britain is preparing for parliamentary elections, where Prime Minister Theresa May is hoping to keep her majority and stay in office. So this is a very sensitive time. What hangs in the balance here is whether the government remains in place, the same government that has pushed through Brexit. Brexit, of course, a big issue in passing, adopting this referendum to leave Europe. The issue of immigration was very big there. And so this could possibly have a great impact on the elections coming in early June.
Any other descriptions on what people are saying they saw? Anything you're hearing from concert goers or people that were on scene as to, you know, what it was like in the moments following these explosions or this explosion?
Witnesses are describing a chaotic scene. At first, people not really knowing what happened, but the video that we're seeing, especially video taken by people who were right there when it happened, a scene of utter chaos, people running, some describing concertgoers as covered with blood, running for their lives, and so a very, very chaotic scene. There are emergency vehicles all around the arena, the entire area sealed off, the movement is restricted, so many people unable to leave the city. We're getting reports that some people are opening up their homes to those who are stranded in the city. And so it's a very chaotic scene in these hours after this attack.
That's VOA London correspondent Luis Ramirez. Thanks for being with us. Well, President Donald Trump assailed Iranian aggression and military ambitions Monday on his first visit to Israel as the American leader.
There is a growing realization among your Arab neighbors that they have common cause with you and the threat posed by Iran. And it is indeed a threat. There's no question about that.
Comments drawing quick approval from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
I want you to know how much we appreciate the change in American policy on Iran. I want you to know how much we appreciate your bold decision to act against the use of chemical weapons in Syria. And I want to tell you also how much we appreciate the reassertion of American leadership in the Middle East.
Trump arrived in Israel after a two-day visit to Saudi Arabia, where he said King Salman assured him the Saudis want peace between the Israelis and Palestinians and roadblocks imposed against Iranian threats.
On those issues, there is a strong consensus among the nations of the world, including many in the Muslim world. I was deeply encouraged by my conversations with Muslim world leaders in Saudi Arabia.
Trump also attacked the administration of former President Barack Obama for agreeing to the 2015 international deal restraining Iran's nuclear weapons program in exchange for lifting economic sanctions against Tehran, a pact the Jewish state adamantly but unsuccessfully opposed. In Tehran, newly reelected Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said Iran wants terrorism uprooted in the Middle East and says it is ready for interaction with its neighbors to restore peace in the region. Later today, President Trump will meet with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas in the West Bank to talk about the peace process. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. UN Security Council scrambles to address the latest North Korean missile launch. More than 31 million internally displaced in 2016. First ever Pride Week shines light on LGBTQI in Lebanon. And scandal-plagued Fox News is hit with three more lawsuits. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. President Trump is proposing to balance the federal budget within 10 years by slashing many social programs, including some that help the poor pay for food and medical care, called food stamps and Medicaid. Officials have outlined some new details of the plan. It includes cuts to medical research and billions in cuts to Medicaid. Joining me now to discuss is healthcare attorney Harry Nelson, who is also co-author of the book, From Obamacare to Trump Care, Why You Should Care. Thank you for being with us. So what do we know about the budget in terms of healthcare?
The Trump budget really tracks with the Republican American Healthcare Act, the House version. It almost assumes that essentially assumes that the House version of the AHCA, which is now before the Senate, passes. Yeah, with deep cuts, particularly $800 billion of cuts to the Medicaid program. So it's a pretty staggering setback in terms of healthcare spending.
How might this impact Americans?
I think for Americans who are living, you know, at or below the poverty line, the effect is going to be dramatic, particularly for able-bodied working age people living at or near the poverty line. The last 7 years have seen a significant expansion that really benefited, above all, working age poor people in the 32 states that took Medicaid dollars. So if you use the numbers that the Obama administration put out, it was 12 million new Medicaid beneficiaries through the Affordable Care Act, and another 8 million or so through various other grant programs that also expanded Medicaid coverage for a broader range of kids at slightly higher income levels, up to 138% of federal poverty level. So all of that is going to be rolling back, and there's going to be a lot of the same people who benefited the last 7 years are going to see their benefits cut unless states step in and fill the void.
So when you say their benefits will be cut, what exactly does this mean for these people? Will it mean that they won't have access to health care?
It's going to depend at a state-by-state level, yeah. But for most of the people who are affected by the Medicaid cut, these were people living at 138% and less of federal poverty level. So really the poorest Americans. And so unless they're getting some other government program, these are not people who have disposable household income available to spend on healthcare. So if they don't have Medicaid, there's not another option for them.
So in other words, they literally could be without healthcare?
They won't have healthcare, except the one kind of healthcare that every American is guaranteed is if you show up very sick at the emergency room under EMTALA, you're required to be treated. Mm-hmm. So that will be the extent of their healthcare.
So nothing preventative, nothing if they have some sort of illness that requires long-term care.
The problem is this puts us back where we were a decade ago, and it's likely to swell emergency rooms, but treating people after they've had the heart attack or after they've had the stroke is not only worse for them, but it's much more expensive for our whole system. It's both the human suffering and the lost productivity are huge economic costs that aren't taken into account. So we're doing away with all of the proactive attention to wellness and just going back to what we've always had, which is really it's a problem for everybody, but especially for hospitals and doctors who treat people in the emergency room.
Why is that?
Well, they're the ones who, under federal law, are required to treat. And so essentially there's an unfunded mandate to provide care in the emergency room. And it translates to higher healthcare costs for everybody else who comes through because hospitals and doctors have to figure out a way to fill that gap.
This is a budget proposal, is it not? It doesn't necessarily mean that this will be approved by lawmakers.
Correct. Yeah, presumably this would be modified depending on what comes out of the Senate and after we have a Senate proposal on health care, whatever reconciliation may happen between the House and Senate versions. So this is just a proposal, and it still is likely to take further shape as we hear from the Senate.
All right, that's health care attorney Harry Nelson, who is also the author or co-author of the book, From Obamacare to Trump Care, Why You Should Care. Thank you for being with us. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, Managing Editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues now. Well, it's hard to know when to stop when listing the threats of the world's coral reef systems. There's overfishing, tourism, and the aquarium trade for starters. Add the continuing effects of climate change, ocean warming, and acidification, and it's easy to see why coral reefs around the world are at risk. Efforts to mitigate the damage are ongoing, but one group of Israeli researchers is trying to solve the problem by searching for stronger coral. VOA's Kevin Enix reports.
During the last ice age, water temperatures in the Gulf of Aqaba got as high as 32 degrees Celsius. And that is why scientists are here taking coral specimens.
The main problem is global warming. Water temperatures are rising, they're rising fast, and this is stressing the corals to the point where they die. And at this rate of decline, there'll be not many reefs left on this planet already at the end of this century.
The idea is that these corals have evolved to withstand high temperatures, the kind that are coming as climate change heats up.
We expose these corals here to a thermal ramping. That means we increase the temperature to resemble a future ocean. And at the same time, we also lower the pH of the seawater.
Early results are promising and suggest that these corals may actually be able to thrive in warm, acidic water.
Most of the variables that we measured, such as energy metabolism or building a skeleton, were actually improved, which suggests that these corals are actually living under suboptimal temperatures right now and might be better prepared for future ocean warming.
If so, the researchers think that they could save some of the world's most at-risk reefs, like the Great Barrier Reef in Australia, by seeding them with this hardier species. Kevin Enix, VOA News, Washington.
And turning now to what's been trending on social media, we are joined for that by Andrew Palchewski. Hey, Andrew, what's going on?
Big news from The Guardian newspaper in the United Kingdom. They have released what they're calling the Facebook Files. They have a slide deck that is put out by Facebook on different things that they censor or take down from Facebook based on being objectionable content, violent content, that kind of stuff. So it's giving us a glimpse into what some of the censorship triggers are for Facebook. And it's actually very interesting because some things you would think should be censored are not under this policy. So for instance, if you make a threat against a public figure, that will be removed by Facebook. You can't do that. But if you tell somebody, I want you to die, that's perfectly fine to put up on Facebook.
Really?
Yep. You can not put up nudity on Facebook, but if you draw something and it's an art piece that features nudity, that is allowed. And perhaps most interesting, because we've talked about this on the show in recent weeks, videos of self-harm. If you are self-harming on Facebook Live, Facebook will not take that video down. They do not want to, quote, censor or punish people in distress. The thought, I guess, is if they take down this video, the people might do something drastic and take their own life. Lots of these nuggets in this report from The Guardian. People are very interested in this report, and they're kind of confused about some of these things and even outraged at some of them, that Facebook wouldn't censor some of these things, especially associated with bullying, with, as we said, self-harm, with violent images. So it is it's opening some eyes on what Facebook can and cannot and chooses not to censor.
All right. Anything else trending?
Yeah. Some more big news for Instagram, which is owned by Facebook. So not a great day for news for Facebook. And this also comes from the United Kingdom, from the Royal Society for Public Health. They did a survey of about 1,500 people between the ages of 14 and 24, and they asked them about different social networks, which ones made them feel good, which ones made them feel bad, which ones they used more of, things with body image, a lot of those different questions to try to drill down how they feel when they use these different networks. And they found that Instagram was rated as having the most negative effects. It caused the most anxiety.
Really?
It caused the most feelings of insecurity, of not being good enough. It kind of makes sense because Instagram is an app driven by photos. And
right.
people, as we know, airbrush photos. They can alter photos.
Right.
And so that's perhaps not surprising. YouTube was the only one that had a positive effect, which maybe is also not surprising. This is an issue with Instagram that we've seen in the past. There was a young woman who was a model who actually went on Instagram and on all the pictures that she had posted where she had been airbrushed or photoshopped, she went on and she said, "This is what happened to do this to my body. This is what was altered," to give people a sense of how unrealistic some of her photos were. The mm-hmm. unfortunate thing is that these are the photos that a lot of young people are holding themselves to and really want to get their bodies to look like that or have their lives look like that.
Yeah, I mean, this is the whole downside to social media. You hear about people saying, you know, they get depressed on Facebook because it looks like everybody else is having such a good time and such a good life. It makes them want to compare their own lives.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's just, I mean, every few months there's one of these surveys that comes out and has this findings. And it's always the same kind of findings that social media can have a negative impact, because what are you putting up on social media? Only the best parts of your life, the vacation photos, the birthday celebrations, the dinners with friends and family. And so that's why people, when they look at the social media, can sometimes feel like they're inadequate or feel like they're not living up to that unrealistic standard.
All right. Well, something to think about for sure. Thanks so much, Andrew. You can follow him on Twitter at APAL. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Well, a new movie from Golden Globe and Oscar-nominated director Todd Haynes, Wonderstruck, is weaving together the stories of two young people who've lost their hearing. And as VOA's David Byrd tells us, deaf actress Millicent Simmonds is winning high praise for her portrayal of Rose in the film.
Wonderstruck is two stories woven into one. When Ben, played by Oakes Fegley, loses his hearing in a 1977 accident, he runs away from his Minnesota home to New York City. He eventually makes his way to the Museum of Natural History and then to a bookstore that sold a book his now dead mother had with the inscription on it, "Love, Danny." In 1927, Rose, played by Millicent Simmonds, escapes her overbearing father in New Jersey and travels to New York, seeking a silent movie star, Lillian Mayhew, played by Julianne Moore. Turns out, Mayhew is actually Rose's mother, and when she threatens to send her back to her father, Rose runs away to the Museum of Natural History. The two stories intertwine in the 1977 blackout in New York. Wonderstruck premiered at this year's Cannes Film Festival in France, and 14-year-old deaf actress Millicent Simmonds is being hailed as a breakthrough. Simmonds, speaking through a sign language interpreter, told the AP that she hopes that her performance will inspire other deaf and hard-of-hearing people who see the film.
I hope that deaf people will see that, you know, they understand the experience of facing obstacles in the hearing world, because communication is not always easy. And it's difficult sometimes, but I want them to understand. I hope the message is that hold on, there'll be people there for you, and you can do anything you want, not only be an actor, but a writer or an airline pilot. There is anything you can do, and don't be afraid. Be brave. Face it.
Julianne Moore, who plays Lillian Mayhew and then later Rose in 1977, says that Simmonds brought life to a role in which she didn't speak a single word through the whole film.
She's someone who is very engaged, is, you know, really, really sees. And her ability to be alive on camera is wonderful. And that's what we all want to do. I mean, that's what we all want to do as actors. And so working with her is like working with a peer. There was no sense ever of working with someone who wasn't experienced or was a child. It was just like, here's my scene partner. What scene are we going to do together?
Director Todd Haynes, nominated for an Oscar for his 2016 film Carol, said that he was mesmerized by the way the 14-year-old Simmonds pulled off her role.
And I was, you know, and you kind of are like, you don't want to jinx it. You're like, maybe she can't act, and maybe once you put a camera on her, it's going to be really bad, and don't breathe. And even Laura Rosenthal, my casting director, and I didn't want to say too much to each other about how much we were falling in love because we just didn't want our hearts to break. And we just kept watching her progress through the process with other kids. And man, did we ever luck out.
Wonderstruck is a joint production from Roadside Attractions and Amazon Studios. It is competing for the Golden Palm at Cannes and has a theatrical release date of October 20th in the United States. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
I'm James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you very much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Charles Hall. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On May 17th, Acting Assistant Secretary of State for Near Eastern Affairs Stuart Jones said the U.S. is determined to hold Iran accountable for its human rights abuses with new actions. He pointed to the newly released report to Congress detailing U.S. sanctions imposed in connection with human rights abuses in Iran. The report includes the sanctions announced last month against the Tehran Prisons Organizations and its former head, Sohrab Soleimani. The United States urges our partners around the world to join us in calling out individuals and entities involved in Iran's human rights abuses. Acting Assistant Secretary Jones said, whether it's imprisoning people arbitrarily, inflicting physical abuse and torture, or executing juvenile offenders, the Iranian regime has for decades committed egregious human rights violations against its own people and foreign nationals, and this pattern of behavior must come to an end. In addition to Iran's human rights violations, the U.S. remains concerned about Iran's ballistic missile development, which is in defiance of U.N. Security Council Resolution 2231. On May 17th, the Treasury Department's Office of Foreign Assets Control designated 7 targets connected with Iran's ballistic missile program, including 2 senior Iranian defense officials, Morteza Farasatpour and Rahim Ahmadi, an Iranian company, and members of a China-based network. In a statement, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said, "This administration is committed to countering Iran's destabilizing behavior, such as Iran's development of ballistic missiles and support to the Assad regime. The United States," he noted, "will remain vigilant when it comes to Iran." Acting Assistant Secretary of State Jones also said, in addition to the actions taken today, we are communicating to the U.S. Congress that the United States continues to waive sanctions as required to continue implementing the U.S. sanctions lifting commitments in the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. He noted this does not diminish the United States' resolve to continue countering Iran's destabilizing activity in the region, whether it be supporting the Assad regime, backing terrorist organizations like Hezbollah, or supporting violent militias that undermine governments in Iraq and Yemen. And above all, the United States will never allow the regime in Iran to acquire a nuclear weapon.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.